This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And we got a good hour for you. We're going to be talking about some food fights in Chicago. We're going to talk about hipsters. And we're going to talk about one mom's fight with a community college in Chicago. Chicago is the center of things, and that brings us to our first segment.
This is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago.
Actually, every time I hear Sinatra, I want a martini, a cigarette, and I want to wear a good hat. In a great suit.
Absolutely.
And that's the opposite of hipster life. Sinatra is actually the opposite, the antithesis of hipster life. Wouldn't that be a great like combination? Get a hipster and Frank Sinatra, put them in a movie together. Have them bunk up. So that was Frank Sinatra with that hit song of his, My Kind of Town, written about one of his favorite cities, Chicago, Illinois. And it is a great place to eat, great Italian food. Drinking town with a football problem, as I like to say. They say it about Buffalo, but I like to say it about Chicago. But would Sinatra write My Kind of Town about Chicago today? Yesterday we heard about where opportunity is in America, and we're going to be covering a lot about this great country and where people are moving to and from, what's going on in people's careers and their businesses. Not enough is spoken about that. It's always big politics in Washington, but the actions in the states and the communities and cities, it's the American people we're going to love to talk about here on Our American Stories. We will not be talking to politicians or about them. Who cares? So this segment is about where opportunity isn't in America, and that is the city of Chicago. A city that doesn't want its people to find opportunity, a city that's causing many of its people to leave. In this segment, we'll tell you the stories and bring you the stories of real human lives impacted by, well, some really stupid rules. Our field correspondent, Alex Cortez, brings you this report.
One of the city's victims is named Claudia. Her story is brought to us by the Illinois Policy Institute.
Me arrestaron dos veces. Pues si Estados Unidos me dijeron que era otra cosa. Y ahora, ¿cómo nos están tratando, no?
Claudia was recounting how the Chicago police arrested her twice. She said, quote, "The United States, they told me, is a different kind of place. And now, look how we're being treated." What would make Claudia say something so dramatic, so devastating, and from a Mexican immigrant of all people? Immigrants who tend to be impassioned about America. Here's Beth Kregor, attorney at the public interest law firm Institute for Justice, on why. It's not what you'd expect.
Unlike almost every major city in the country, unlike most major cities, cosmopolitan places in the world, Chicago bans simple street food. That means that vendors who are already out there selling traditional foods like tamales or sliced fruit or other kinds of snacks, they're all working in the shadow of the law, and they can be and are regularly stopped by inspectors or police officers.
Stopped, arrested, and even fined $2,000. 20 times more than the fine for parking in front of a fire hydrant. Which causes the greater public hazard? Claudia is one of those street food vendors, serving tamales, rice pudding, and hot chocolate. Every day she wakes up at 2:30 a.m., and every day she works until 10 p.m. Absolutely no leisure time for herself and only 4.5 hours of sleep every single day. She loves serving her food that customers love, but she doesn't love walking into legal danger every time she pulls her cart into the dark of the early morning.
Llegó el día que dijo el policía, tiren esa porquería. Eso no sirve, es basura. Yo dije, ¿cómo le va a decir basura a la comida? Yo lloraba mucho.
Claudia said, the day arrived when a policeman told me, throw all this trash away. It's worthless. It's garbage. And I say, how can you call food garbage? I cried hard. A good tamale is like a treasure that's worth the quest. It's never garbage. And an honest day's work is never garbage either. For a city rampant with violence, a city that, after all the attention brought to its violence, has seen a 21% increase in homicides over the last year. Should this, where its police officers, be focusing on street vendors serving tamales? Claudia is likely crying today, too. This time, though, tears of joy. Thanks to the street vendors who fought for their freedom to flourish, and to groups like the Illinois Policy Institute and the Institute for Justice, who raised awareness and filed lawsuits on their behalf, the City Council of Chicago just overturned the ban on street vending. It was too late for some Chicago street vendors, though, including coffee and tea vendor Sarah Travis, who had to abandon the hometown that she loves.
You're Abe Froman.
That's right. I'm Abe Froman.
The sausage king of Chicago.
They're not gonna catch us. We're on a mission from God.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
And I honestly had no intentions of moving. I was very much set on we can make it work here, and we're gonna work really hard all winter, and we set a couple deadlines, and those deadlines came and went. And it became more clear to us that we can always come home to Chicago, and that's something that we definitely want to pursue, but Texas is ready for us.
Moves aren't fun. It's a big decision to move your family, and an even greater risk to move your business. But in Chicago, it may be a greater risk to keep your business there, something Chicagoans who deeply love their city wish weren't so. Sarah was surprised what happened the very week she registered her business in Austin, Texas, which took all of 15 minutes.
The mayor of my city is in this new city that I'm going to be in, and he's telling everyone how great Chicago is and how we all need to move to Chicago and bring all the jobs and all the, you know, welcoming entrepreneurship. And I'm sitting there going, wow, like, I'm right here. I'm in this city where you are now because you're making me be there, because I can't physically stay where I want to stay.
As I throw each one of you.
This is Lee Habib. When we come back, we'll be joined by Hillary Gowans, the managing editor at the Illinois Policy Institute. Great report, Alex.
My kind of town, Chicago.
Like campfires? How about a campfire atmosphere with friends and brought to your ears wherever you are? That's what we do at Our American Stories, a show that tells great American stories of love, final thoughts before dying, funny stories about first jobs, this day in history, American dreams and marriages, and so much more. And then here's your stories on these big topics live every weeknight, or listen online at ouramericannetwork.org. We'll hope you join the campfire and call in with your stories.
Are you tired of all the talk about politics? How about talking about paychecks? Because that's what the Job Creators Network does. It's the voice of real job creators that's been missing. Led by Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus, over 50 job creators across the country are members.
Home Depot, if we started it today, we could never have succeeded with today's regulations.
Your voice is needed. If you're a job creator and interested in learning more, visit jobcreatorsnetwork.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Thank you for taking time to learn more about how you could support March for Babies in 2015. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib. You're listening to Our American Stories. Coming up in a bit, hipster moments. We'll have Jesse's World. Right now, you're listening to the great Robert Johnson song. And we're in Oxford, Mississippi right here, not far from that crossroad where Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil. Not far away from Memphis either. We're here in Oxford, Mississippi. And last segment, we talked about how Chicago isn't so sweet to its own people trying to pursue their dreams, and told the stories of street vendors named Claudia and Sarah whose businesses were rendered illegal because Chicago banned street food vendors, one of the only major cities in the world to do so. And thankfully, the ban was recently overturned. With us for this segment is one of the players involved in that victory. And we love to talk about victories here. What's happening in the states. Again, Washington, D.C., we don't care. Let everybody else in talk radio talk about, you know, those androids in Washington. We're here to talk about the people of the United States and what's happening in regions across this state. And joined by us now, Hillary Gowans. Thanks for coming on with our show. I don't think we have Hillary hooked up, but just give it a second. And Hillary, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Lee.
Oh, you bet. Sorry about that little technical glitch there. Hillary, tell us this. Why, you know, we just listened to that story. And again, thanks for the great work you're doing over there at the Illinois Policy Institute. This is important stuff. Why was there ever a ban on street food vendors in the first place? What was going on there?
Well, first of all, I just want to say it was great to hear some familiar voices in your segment just before I came on. I heard the voice of Sarah Travis. I heard the voice of Claudia Perez. And those two women know just how hard it was to fight for food cart freedom. There really was no good reason for food carts to be banned in Chicago. Food carts are a beloved part of a lot of communities across the city, particularly in low-income Hispanic communities, like where Claudia's from. Little Village is on the southwest side of the city, and every morning before dawn, Claudia is up serving delicious tamales and elotes to factory workers on their way to the job. A lot of what you see in Chicago with silly rules like this has to do with the fact that the city likes to protect established players, whether that's restaurants, whether that's taxis or other kinds of businesses.
So it's big versus small in the end, and it's about how bigger organizations and companies try and block out small ones. And in essence, it sounds like, Hillary, blocking out the competition.
Right, and that's what we've seen. It's a hard fight for little guys like Claudia and Sarah to get the freedom they deserve. We're really grateful that City Council passed an ordinance that overturned the city's ban on food carts. That was a great victory, and while you want to jump up and down about that, we couldn't celebrate for too long because less than a day after the city overturned their ban on food carts, two aldermen decided to introduce an ordinance that would essentially limit where food carts could operate in two wards. One, in the popular River North area, which is home to a lot of Chicago's finest restaurants, and one area just outside of Wrigleyville, just surrounding Wrigleyville. So while everyone is ecstatic that food carts are going to be able to operate in the city, we're all very concerned to see that aldermen are already acting against the best wishes of these vendors.
You know, what's interesting is that the whole country is very familiar with the ACLU and all the fights they fight for leftists. But, you know, the types of fights you're fighting are for just ordinary Americans. Forget politics. There's no ideology here. You're basically fighting for, you're not asking the political bona fides of the folks, how they vote, what they do. You're just fighting in the end, it sounds like, Hillary, for their freedom.
Yeah, and that's why this project is so near and dear to my heart. I don't like to pick sides. I don't like the left. I don't like the right. I want to fight for what's right. And I think that everyone, whether you're on the left side of the aisle or the right side of the aisle politically, can agree that it's not fair to prevent a mother from being able to work hard and serve delicious food to support her family. And we were so encouraged to see that we were joined by a coalition of people from both sides of the aisle. Now we just have to keep working hard and fighting to make sure that the city of Chicago doesn't continue to do what it's so good at doing, and that's protecting the establishment to the detriment of the little guy.
You know, two things I wanted to ask you, Hillary. They're separate questions. We'll take some separate answers. But the first is, where is the media on this? For the life of me, I don't understand why we aren't hearing more stories. I mean, who wouldn't be for the little guy here? I have so many friends who at certain points of their lives did the street vending thing. And my goodness, as a person who lived in New York, I had my absolute favorite food vendors all around the city, including my perfect hot dog right by the Hilton on Avenue of the Americas by a guy named Victor, who was there for like 13 years, and one day he disappeared, and it broke my heart. Why isn't the media covering this? And is your outreach to the media, because I'm sure you try, what happens with the big stations in Chicago and the big networks? Are people giving you the time of day?
Well, you know what's really sad is that when people aren't exposed to something like you were exposed to, you had your favorite vendor. Chicagoans were never exposed to street food culture, so they didn't know what they were missing. And our big fight was to introduce not only the media but the public to the faces of these people who are driving street food culture all around the city in the shadows, really. So our first step was to show people like Claudia, like Sarah, show who they are, show why what they're doing is important. And once we started to do that, the media really did perk up their ears. They started to listen. We were published in the Sun-Times and Crane Chicago Business. We were covered on this issue, and the street vendors were covered by every major media outlet in the city. So we were really encouraged to see that once people became familiar with the plight of these wonderful vendors, that support started to swell up from every corner imaginable.
Well, that's great news. Here is the other thing I don't understand, Hillary. So you're the restaurant. You're Mr. Fancy Pants Restaurant, Inc., and it's White Cloth. Where is the lost volume sale? And that's an economic term, and what a lost volume sale means is the thinking is, well, if that person going at that street vendor eats a hot dog, that means he's not coming to my White Cloth diner. Well, that makes no sense, Hillary. I mean, what are they really trying to protect? What are they afraid of?
I think people don't realize that it's not a zero-sum game when it comes to food options. The city has been protecting brick-and-mortar restaurants for a long time because these restaurants have so much clout. They're organized. They donate to politicians. And the truth of the matter was when we were able to break through and get people to understand why the city needed to overturn the ban on food carts, the truth was that people realized that all that this would do would put food carts on a level playing field with restaurants. You know, people in the loop, if they're in a hurry, they want a quick lunch, they're not going to go sit down at a five-star restaurant. They might, however, grab a hot dog from a food cart. But for every person like that, there's another group of people who are trying to have a business lunch. And I think that once people are going to get over their fear, they're going to realize that there's no threat. This is only going to enhance food culture in an already fantastic food city.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's just no lost sale here. It's a sort of a level of paranoia and a level of unfairness that just makes not only the good guys look good, but Hillary, it makes the bad guys look really bad. I want to put out an offer to you before we go to a break, and thanks so much for joining us. We want to track this, Hillary. We want to work with you and find these stories. If we could maybe do a weekly beat on this, big versus small, and fighting for the little guy, and reach out to you and the folks at the Institute for Justice, and maybe other, if you maybe ring that bell of yours and call up some of your friends at some of the other state policy institutes, could you help me enlist in a fight for these kind of fights, the Uber fights, the big versus small, the big companies blocking out innovation and the little guy? How would you feel about that offer, Hillary?
Lee, I think that would be a great idea. I'm happy to come back and talk about these things. The Illinois Policy Institute for a little more than a year has been working on a campaign that we call No Cronies. You can visit nocronies.com to learn more about it. It follows the story of vendors like Claudia, of Uber drivers like Jim Evans, who's a retiree who was laid off and drives an UberX so he can support himself and his wife in his retirement. Stories of people who drive pedicab and are oppressed by the city. What we do is we track the stories of the little guy, the people who the city wants to trample, and that's a big part of our fight at the Illinois Policy Institute. In Illinois, we've got big problems. We're facing more than $100 billion in pension debt. We've got a city of Chicago that is staring down a billion-dollar budget deficit. But the reason that I love what we do so much is that we're actually taking the time to give a voice to people who are voiceless.
You bet. And you know what you're doing, Hillary? You're putting out some wins, W's, in the column for freedom and economic freedom. I really appreciate you joining us, Hillary. Keep up the good fight, and let's try and make this a weekly hit. My folks here will call you tomorrow, and let's see if we can do this every week. Thanks so much for what you do, Hillary.
It's my pleasure. Nice talking to you, Lee.
You bet. This is Lee Habib. You're listening to Our American Stories. When we come back, hipsters. They're everywhere.
Thank you, land of California, for my sweet home, Chicago. Oh, way up to want to go.
As you follow the presidential campaign, do you find yourself longing for a statesman and not just another politician? The people at Hillsdale College show what it takes in their latest free online course, Winston Churchill and Statesmanship. Our good friend Larry Arn, president of Hillsdale College, is a leading expert on Winston Churchill. This fascinating study examines Churchill's life, weaving history and political philosophy together in a course that will help you understand how and why Churchill was the greatest person of the 20th century. The course teaches how the duty of a statesman points upwards towards something outside of itself. You can access these excellent free online classes at hillsdale.edu. Look for the online courses at the top of the page. Hillsdale College has been pursuing the truth and defending liberty since 1844, and this course will help you do so as well. Learn how the virtues of Winston Churchill can impact your life and the life of our nation. Enroll today for free by going to hillsdale.edu and look for online courses at the top of the page.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The search for 33 missing crew members from a U.S. cargo ship that sank last week during a hurricane is over. The Coast Guard says it has stopped looking for survivors from the El Faro at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The 790-foot cargo ship sank last week off the Bahamas during Hurricane Joaquin, a Category 4 storm with 140-mile-an-hour winds and 50-foot waves. Officials in Columbia, South Carolina, are looking for other options to protect the capital city's main water source after part of the Columbia Canal collapsed, forcing workers to stop building a dam meant to plug an earlier breach. The mayor wants residents to conserve water, but he says there are contingency plans to make sure the city doesn't run out of water. On Wall Street, the Dow by 122 points, the Nasdaq rose 43, the S&P advanced 16, crude oil down 72 cents to $47.81 a barrel. More details at srnnews.com.
Two little tablets is all it takes to get thicker, fuller hair guaranteed. Viviscal is the number one drug-free hair growth supplement in the U.S., with one box being sold every minute globally. It's clinically proven, loved by celebrities, and recommended by doctors. And right now, a 90-day supply of Viviscal is being offered in your area risk-free, plus free shipping. Call 800-481-7987. Viviscal nourishes thinning hair from within. It makes thin hair full, full hair beautiful, and promotes the growth of thicker, fuller hair guaranteed. Viviscal is so effective, 96% of women would recommend it to a friend. Listen to this.
It's vibrant, shiny, bouncy, everything you want your hair to be. I love Viviscal because it works. It completely works.
Want to try Viviscal? Every listener that calls can try it risk-free for 90 days, plus free shipping. Get thicker, fuller hair guaranteed. Call now, 800-481-7987. 800-481-7987. That's 800-481-7987.
Pain. John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year, in addition to the emotional stress on employees and their families. That's why Famous Footwear is committed to raising funds to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in the March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And we're about to do a report on hipsters, because they're everywhere, and we want to help you solve your neighborhood hipster problems. And if you're a hipster, and you're thinking of getting out of the lifestyle, we're here for you. You know, you don't have to give your name, your location. Just think of it as sort of HA, Hipsters Anonymous, you know, and we'll help you. We'll coach you out of the life. It's okay.
We have a bench.
But before we do that, we need to get to, well, Jesse's world.
Let me get my shoes. What's happening to my shoes?
A University of Connecticut student faces criminal charges over a confrontation with a campus food court manager who wouldn't let him buy macaroni and cheese with bacon and jalapeno peppers. A 9-minute obscenity-laced video clip posted online shows freshman Luke Gotti arguing with and eventually shoving the manager inside of the university's cafeteria. Police said that Gotti had been refused service for carrying an open container of alcohol. After shoving the manager, Gotti is attacked by another employee and arrested by a police officer. Here, the spoiled brat can be heard crying for his shoes after the arrest.
Let me get my shoes! What's happening to my shoes?
Miami police arrested a 21-year-old student by the name of John Harrington for pretending lines of powdered sugar was cocaine. Inside the University of Miami dorms, administrative searches are commonplace and students are warned days ahead of time so they can get rid of their bongs, beer bottles, and hot plates beforehand. Harrington thought he'd have some fun with the search. Before inspectors arrived, the 21-year-old English major left lines of white powder on the coffee table and the kitchen counter, a rolled-up dollar bill, and 7 white pills. Harrington figured everyone would get a good chuckle out of it and move on. Instead, Harrington ended up handcuffed, dragged to jail, and charged with felony cocaine possession. A would-be thief who made chicken noises during a robbery attempt faces new charges, according to police in Concord, New Hampshire. Officers were called to a Sears where employees said a man tried to steal DeWalt drills valued at $900. When the employees tried to stop the man, he made chicken noises and fled on foot, leaving the drills behind.
What's wrong, McFly? Chicken?
Shortly after, authorities released the video to the public. They received several calls identifying the man as 21-year-old Nathan Lesage. Police said Lesage faces charges of attempted theft. For Our American Stories, I'm Jesse Edwards.
Great job tonight, Jesse.
Good
again.
Stuff.
It's good stuff. And you, I am going to say it every night for the next 10 years. You need help. But that's why we love you. And now it's time for our hipster segment of the week.
Hurricane Sandy, a devastating event leaving destruction in its wake. But one species of New Yorker has proven remarkably well adapted to such circumstances. The Brooklyn hipster. Where ordinary citizens struggle with gas shortages, traffic gridlock, and absence of public transportation, hipsters' vintage bikes and skateboards allow them to move about freely. With food in short supply, hipsters rely on their skills in salami curing and artisanal pickling. Their vintage denim is extremely durable, and if new clothes are needed, they can knit. When heat fails, hipsters' ample facial hair provides warmth, and in extreme cold, they can deploy their hoodies to remain cozy. If electricity is not available, hipsters have the ability to go acoustic at will. And the lack of fresh water for washing and bathing, definitely not a problem. The Brooklyn hipster, one of nature's miraculous adaptations to the modern world.
Well, at least they're independent.
That's right.
It could be the Brooklyn Harlem hipster.
That's right. Or the Denver hipster. I was in Denver recently. They were all over the place. They're everywhere.
It's a massive outbreak.
Modern day Renaissance men.
Oh, indeed. So does this sound like someone you know? And by the way, according to the public policy polling, only 16% of Americans actually like hipsters. An even worse popularity rating than Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, and Hillary Clinton, if you could possibly imagine a group of people less popular than them. We just found them. And by the way, Dictionary.com's definition seems, well, let's just say unsatisfactory. And, well, I don't even want to get into that. So I want to dig into a little commentary that Alex pulled up. And, well, again, it gets back to that whole idea of giving up the lifestyle. And the guy's name was Derek Loy, and he's been living the hipster lifestyle for the past 2 years. But after his bank account began to dwindle, he reverted to, well, mainstream customs. And here was his confessional that he posted on a blog. "I tried my best," said Loy. "I really did. I was juicing regularly."
Juicing?
Juicing. "Eating local and organic.
It's not steroids.
I was doing my best to only drink craft beer."
Well, naturally.
"Unfortunately, my bank account just couldn't handle hipster living." Loy said the added stress on his bank account caused him to revert to a more conventional lifestyle that he enjoyed in his pre-hipster years. Quote, "All the stuff I was doing was great. Kale salads and IPAs were delicious. But you know what's also great? Cheap stuff. Bud Light. Frozen chicken. Pizza. A Coke. Was I saving a lot of money on clothes? Absolutely. I mean, I was buying stuff from thrift stores that homeless people probably would turn down. And because I rarely showered, my water bill had never been lower. But those discounts pale in comparison to the money I save when I go to Kroger to buy a half-gallon tub of ice cream instead of chive and lentil-flavored Froyo from Whole Foods." Loy said he also enjoyed hobbies that he wasn't able to partake in the past 2 years, including golf, being able to talk about football with friends, as well as just, well, the pleasure of a cleanly shaven face. Quote, "Do I miss hanging out at a brewery, drinking with a scarf, and talking and talking about Radiohead tattoos? Actually, no. No, I don't. I'm finally free to go to Buffalo Wild Wings and watch sports on Sunday while drinking a giant Bud," said Loy ecstatically. "The ironic thing is, if I didn't make this change, I would have been close to living out of my van, which would have made me a god amongst hipsters." You know, if you know somebody like Derek struggling again to get out of the hipster lifestyle, well, you know, go ahead, give a call. And you know, have you had friends? You know, the kind of guy who, like, a band comes out, they release their first record, and it sells like 50,000 copies. And then the second record comes out, it gets more popular. And what do they say? Always, Jesse. What do they say?
They sold out.
They sold out. Right. I'm done with them. I'm
so
finished.
Over.
They're over.
Done.
Done.
So mainstream, man.
So mainstream, dude.
It's hard to find a hipster because anytime you ask, you know, "Do you consider yourself a hipster?" No.
No.
No hipster considers himself to be a hipster. That just kind of ruins the point, I guess.
It's one of the first principles of hipsterdom. Thou shalt not admit.
Yeah. The first rule about being a hipster
is not admitting you're a hipster.
Well, I have got this T-shirt that my wife got me, and it's a bear, and it's got its arms and claws reared, and it says, "Don't feed the hipsters." Nice. Well, when we come back, we're going to get a little more serious, and we're going to talk about, well, one mom's struggle to take on a political machine at a giant community college, again, in Illinois. And we're not picking on the state. It just so happens that, well, Illinois's got real problems, as we learned from Hillary Gowans. And so we're going to dig into this remarkable lady's story. And I met her about 3 or 4 months ago in Chicago. And you would have never picked her as the kind of dynamo that would actually take on a multi-million dollar fraud being perpetuated under the auspices of educating students in this county. I think it's the biggest. Is it the biggest county college in Chicago?
It's the third biggest in Chicago, the third biggest public college. Even after the University of Illinois at Chicago, it's a massive community college.
Yeah, and this lady basically staged a coup on the board and took it over. A mom. And this is a great story. And mom power, we're going to dig into that on this show regularly. The power of moms to just, well, change the world. I don't even get in the way of my wife when she's got a grudge. Just get out of the way. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. We got Jesse here, Alex, and Greg. When we come back, one mom against the machine.
Every day, Our American Stories brings to you the Wall Street Journal Story of the Day with captivating interviews.
There is a kind of replicator staring us in the face, which can spread from brain to brain.
Music.
One day in 1992, These Are Days came on the rock station. The song with Natalie Merchant singing had just been released and captured my existence.
Intriguing profiles.
If you get to know someone in a war, they might well die much sooner than you'd prefer.
Sports, movie reviews, and so much more. From what's trending in the culinary world to style and fashion. Travel, art, real estate, and careers are just some of the stories you'll hear from the Wall Street Journal. On Our American Stories, Wall Street Journal, Story of the Day.
The Wall Street Journal, America's Stories. You'll find it all and more at The Wall Street Journal. Subscribe today at WSJ.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Tim Austin, Senior Vice President of Kmart. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year. That's why Kmart is committed to raising funds through our employees, customers, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib with Our American Stories, and we love stories here about David versus Goliath, about small versus big, stories of average folks, especially moms, challenging the status quo, challenging local government, challenging bureaucracies, doing what's right for their families, challenging their own government, who work for them, but often forget it. A few months ago, I met a real-life David. I was seated next to her by chance, actually. It was the last seat in the house. There was a meeting in Chicago for Adam Andrzejewski's Transparency Army, American Transparency. She didn't say much. She seemed like, well, just an ordinary mom in an ordinary suburb of Chicago. We made some small talk. And then I discovered she was the person of honor at this particular event. She had stayed at home, raised her family. She's a classical violinist, a director at the local ballet. She's fought the height disadvantage all of her life, coming in at just 4 feet 11 inches. Her name? Kathy Hamilton. She decided to run for elected office to make her community a better place. And she won. But Kathy had no idea what she'd signed up for. This is her story, One Mom versus the Machine. Brought to you by our field correspondent, Alex Cortez.
When Kathy was elected a trustee of her local community college, the College of DuPage, they didn't provide her any training for her new job. But being a certified public accountant, she tried to make sense of the financial information that she had access to.
I saw significant issues with the auditing. I saw significant issues with needless cash accumulation, upwards of $300 million. And there was an issue of the request for a $20 million grant that looked like pay for play to me for an unsubstantiated, unexplained need for a building for $50 million.
Not a great sign, but Kathy was a newbie. There had to be some explanations, she figured. She would just ask them about it.
My idea was to go in front of the board and explain things and lay them out the same way I did when I was working as an analyst for Fortune 500 companies and as a CPA, just explain things, and of course people would understand. But actually, when I did that, I got censured. So that didn't work out very well.
Not much was working out well. She was standing alone on almost every vote, her vote versus the other seven. She didn't want it to be this way. All she wanted was to work together to make their community a better place. Here's Adam Andrzejewski of the watchdog group, American Transparency.
Moms like Kathy purely and simply want to straighten out the system. They don't go into politics to hand off a contract to their buddy. They don't go into politics to procure a job for their friends or their family.
When Kathy discovered that the employee running the college's radio station paid his own consulting firm $440,000 for equipment and services he never even provided. She asked for an independent review of the station's finances. She was ignored, and then she was kicked off the audit committee, despite being the only CPA on the whole board. They even asked her if she really was a CPA. They thought she was just a stay-at-home mom. Their words.
I was shocked. Because, you know what? You're never just a stay-at-home mom. Being a mom is the most important job there is for a woman, I believe. Because you are changing the world every time you work with your child and you support your child.
All of their personal attacks started to weigh heavily on her.
I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to turn. Some of my family told me to quit. Some of my friends said, I am so proud of you for sticking up for people that can't stick up for themselves. So on either side, I had a little bit of pressure.
Kathy knew she had to do something different. Her reform measures were being voted down by every other board member. The machine wasn't going to bring about change.
At that moment, instead of taking this sort of studious approach to cooperating and, you know, just sort of a scholastic approach to making change, I had to up my game and promote protests, in a sense, and insurrection. So that was kind of a difficult step for me to take.
It was time to rage against the machine. Adam did what he does best, filing Freedom of Information Act requests to force them to open up their books, starting with President Dr. Robert Bruder's compensation package, which had never been disclosed, despite being a public, taxpayer-supported college.
It was a battle to get the contract. The president did not want his contract released. The board had been told over many years that that was a private contract. They couldn't talk about it. The president had a contract of total compensation worth $500,000 per year. That's what started a great amount of public attention.
Making more than the governor of Illinois, his own boss, more than any governor in the country, more than the president of the United States, and for a community college president. No wonder they wanted to hide it. The $500,000 number doesn't even include the special perks Bruder gave to himself. The college paid for his membership to a private shooting club and a lot of fine dining and drinking at a French restaurant he opened up on the community college campus.
It might be the only French restaurant on any campus across the country, and that French restaurant lost roughly $2 million over its first 4 years of operation. So this president, Robert Bruder, not only developed this upscale French restaurant, complete with a world-class wine cellar, and hired a French sommelier, but also, it wasn't enough for him. He opened up house accounts. And between the president of the school and his administrators, and actually other trustees on the board, they racked up nearly $300,000 of expenses billed off against taxpayer students and the scholarship fund at this Waterley French restaurant.
Adam's American transparency kept going.
We found a strategy delineated to the board to bring political support to then-incumbent governor Pat Quinn in exchange for procuring a $20 million state construction grant. From the broke state of Illinois into the College of DuPage, you already had $200 million in its bank account.
Nothing to see here. Bruder was just joining in on the time-honored tradition of pay-for-play in Illinois. And then there was his email outlining that with the government grant, the college should bank it until we figure out how to use it and then build something, anything, any way to get more taxpayer money.
Rarely do you get a peek inside of the system where they put it in writing. And so this is why this was so unique and so valuable.
So unique that pressure was building on him big time. Bruder had no choice but to resign. Not that resigning was all that bad. The Board of Trustees, except for Kathy, voted to give him a nice little package.
He was given a $752,000 golden handshake to leave.
No amount of public shame was going to stop the machine from paying back one of their own. The friend who gave them lucrative contracts to their private businesses and French meals on the house, The board even went so far as to naming a building after him as part of his golden handshake.
'Cause I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden twinkle in my eye.
But they messed up. The golden package was granted without public discussion and without a public vote, all violating the Open Meetings Act. Once exposed, they were forced to vote on all of it again, this time before the public. The machine tried to make it so that as few members of the public as possible would be there.
We had to win a court case to move it from a classroom that seated about 30 people, where the administration would reserve half of the seats for themselves, to a room to accommodate the large crowd. We won that court case at significant cost to our organization, and they sat the room for 300. And nobody thought we could get 300 people to show up to the meeting. And 500 people showed up. 75 speakers took to the microphone, and only one of them supported the old majority on that board and the administration.
75 speakers in opposition and one in support. And still the board publicly re-voted for his $750,000 golden parachute, 7-1. It was clear to Kathy that the machine was never going to listen, not to her, not to taxpayers, not to anyone. There was only one option left, the brute force of elections to kick them out. Remember that Kathy had zero political experience before she ran for office. Now she was recruiting three reform-minded candidates to challenge incumbents so that they can take back the board.
I created a slate, and those individuals were termed the clean slate. And with a lot of elbow grease and work and fundraising, the clean slate won. And on April 7th, we formed the new majority at the College of DuPage.
The new reform majority with Kathy as chairwoman recently voided Bruder's golden parachute and is passing absolutely radical reforms, at least for higher education.
We have put in place in the budget a 5% property decrease and a $5 tuition decrease, which is pretty much unheard of.
It was a long road to get here for this ordinary mom, but a worthy road. A road we're all called to go on.
The only thing that can happen is failure. And then after you fail, and you pick yourself up and you start all over again. You cannot be afraid to fail. You will fail. You will fail, and then you will succeed. There's nothing wrong with that.
One mom versus the machine. This is Alex Cortez with Our American Stories.
Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.